And away we go, back for hour number two this morning right here on WWGH Radio. Scott Spears along with you for the ride, 15 and a half minutes past the hour. And you are not going to want to change the dial for love nor money for the next 45 minutes. Because as you know, one thing on this program we love to do is have great broadcasters on, and certainly pioneering broadcasters. Over the years of this show, the 17-year run of this program, we've had Phil Donahue, Sally Jesse Raphael, Dick Cavett, Larry King, Barry Farber, Cousin Brucey, and a whole host of other great radio personalities, Gary Burbank. The list goes on and on, but there is one gentleman who we have always wanted to have on because he certainly cut a path in the radio world and the broadcasting industry, but have never had the chance to have on. Well, that wait ends this morning. He is the undisputed king of novelty radio, the good doctor, Dr. Demento. Doctor, how are you?
Oh, great. Woo, woo, woo. Wind up your radio. Hello, Ohio. Hello, Scott. Hello, world. Wind up your radio.
Doctor, it's so good to have you on the program. We've had them all on, and it's great for you to be here this morning.
Oh, it's great to be there. Hey, send some of that snow our way. We're dry as a bone out here in California.
How are things out in California? Boy, we see the news all the time. Are things okay where you are?
Oh, things are fine here. The fires are in a certain neighborhood, and it's really bad news there. The fires are mostly in the mountains where there's a lot of brush that's really, really dry. When the winds blow, it catches fire, and it spreads just instantaneously. But I'm out in the flatlands, a long ways from any of that. So, of course, we always have earthquakes to worry about, but then there's some real nice things about living here as well.
I bet that is true. Now, there are a couple things we want to mention here right off the top, and we'll mention these throughout the hour. Dr. Demento offers a brand new two-hour episode of his show every week. It's still on via drdemento.com. Now, remember, monthly subscribers have access to a vast streaming archive of episodes of the Dr. Demento shows aired from the 1970s to present day as the show continues to go on. Also, the all-new and number one Billboard charting comedy album Dr. Demento Covered in Punk is out now. Visit coveredinpunk.com or dementedpunk.com for more info. And as we head into the holiday season, think about that. Dr. Demento, more than 40 years on the air. What's the secret to your longevity?
Oh, I keep it fresh all the time as much as I can. There's still new funny stuff coming out, novelty music, comedy music, whatever you want to call it, and some stand-up and sketch comedy, too. So I keep them laughing and keep them thinking a little bit, too, as best I can.
Now, Doctor, we heard a little bit of your style at the beginning of this interview. Where did your style come from, and how would you describe it on air?
Well, it kind of evolved. You know, I was a record collector as a kid. I wasn't super social, but I did start playing records for the sock hops at our school. We had kind of a small school, and they didn't have a budget for big-name disc jockeys, so who has the most records of anybody at our school? Why, Barry, of course. So long before I had the name Dr. Demento, I was spinning records at our high school. This was back in the 50s in Minneapolis, Minnesota was where it was. So I started kind of developing a little way of talking to the audience then. First, it was just dedications. For a dime, you could dedicate a song to somebody. And so I developed a little spiel for that. But it really started out, my spiel really started after I got on a commercial station for this time, for the first time, which was in 1970, Pasadena, California. And they gave me the name Dr. Demento. Everybody had a funny name there, so that became mine. And I lived into it. And I developed this character as somebody who knew a whole lot about the roots of rock and roll. That was kind of how it started. And at first, it was not entirely a funny music program. I played all sorts of obscure early records that had some kind of relevance to the future, perhaps, like old blues songs that the Rolling Stones had covered. I would play the original versions. Or for instance, in 1970, Sly and the Family Stone was about as hot as you could get. But Sly had been making records for 8 years, and I had some of the first ones, so I would play those. That's what the Dr. Demento show was all about. And I would sneak in things like the Purple People Eater and the Monster Mash and They're Coming to Take Me Away, Ha Ha, the Funny Farm, things like that. And the more of those things I played, the more popular the show got. The more I played those, people would say, oh, well, why don't you play, like, Transfusion? That was a hit back in 1956, so I played it. And eventually those kind of took over the show, and the show became more popular. So here I am all those years later.
As you had said at the radio station you were at the time, everybody had a different kind of a name, and they gave you Dr. Demento. Was there any particular reason that name came about?
I think it happened when one of the other guys there, a man known as the obscene Stephen Clean, was talking with a friend, and they were just kind of free associating and talking to each other. And have you ever met Dr. Demento? You know, the ultimate rock and roll historian. It was just free associating. At least that's what he told me.
Now, a lot of people get names that they don't like. Did you always like that name?
After about 2 weeks, I realized it rolled off the tongue nicely. And so, I was happy with it. I copyrighted it. It's mine now.
What was your childhood like? What was it like to grow up?
Well, I thought it was pretty nice. My folks were... read a lot of books. They had season tickets to the symphony. They went to the art museum a lot. So that's kind of the culture I grew up with. And they had a lot of records, mostly classical, but I really started enjoying the phonograph. And I thought I was a pretty lucky kid. I hear something about poor kids in other countries, things like that. That was right after the end of World War II. So there's a lot of pretty miserable people out there in the world. But anyway, my dad enlivened things considerably when I was four, when he brought home a new record by Spike Jones, Cocktails for Two. And it was like I said, new at the time. And with all the gunshots and all the sound effects and the lively music, I was very happy to have that, played it a lot. And so that enlivened my childhood considerably. And eventually he brought home more records by Spike Jones and some of the other novelty songs of that time. And so along with the classical music, I came to enjoy that.
As all this is going on, in the back of your mind, are you ever thinking, maybe one day I want to end up on the radio, maybe one day I want to be a broadcaster?
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I got my own phonograph, I would get a little stack of records and pretend to be a DJ. And that was Burl Ives singing Lavender Blue, Dilly Dilly, something like that. It was a popular song in 1948 or 9. So I would pretend. And then, like I said, there was high school. As soon as I got out, I was very active on the campus radio station at the college I went to, Reed College in Portland, Oregon. So kind of I learned how to run a board, how to queue up records and that sort of thing. So that got me a little more into it. And as soon as I got out of college, I auditioned for a couple of local radio stations. And I didn't have the spiel that I do now, of course. And I didn't have exactly what they wanted. That was the early 60s, and they still wanted disc jockeys with booming voices who talked like that. And I didn't quite qualify, but eventually radio and I kind of grew into each other. Along came the late 60s when radio became more informal, especially that newfangled thing called FM radio. So that, of course, is where I found a home.
Can you tell me about the first Dr. Demento show, the first shift you took on air? What was the format of the show? What was it like the first day?
Well, I had appeared just as a casual guest on the station several times before, and really the first Dr. Demento show, I was still officially a guest, and I had 1 hour in the middle of the obscene Stephen Kleen show, and I brought a stack of records from home and talked about them. No, I don't remember what was the first one I played, but I think Transfusion by Nervous, actually, was on at least the first or second show. And like I said, I played more and more novelty records as the people started to like them. And then I expanded from there to other kinds of funny stuff before the rock and roll era, things like Spike Jones and Tom Lehrer, the famous alternative creator of unusual songs like Be Prepared, That's the Boy Scouts Marching Song, and went into all the things that the Boy Scouts were really doing, and the old Dope Peddler, that was an early favorite, that's on Tom Lehrer's first album. He's still around, he's 91, and you can still get his records of fabulous stuff. And I had already had a large collection of the old 78 shellac records, so I started playing some of those and listening to comedy from the early 20th century.
Well, Dr. Demento, one of the things that goes hand in hand with you is this enormous record collection. Now, as of 2019, where is this collection and how many records are in it?
I've lost count long ago. It's up into six figures. It's in my home and other facilities nearby. I don't want to be too specific.
Now, at one point, did the floor not cave in at your house because of this?
Yes, that is true. I like to say it was under the heavy metal section. So anyway, yeah, I was living in a rented house in the Sherman Oaks, California, actually a fairly tony neighborhood of Los Angeles, and my wife and I, we were sleeping and we heard this big thump. We thought a burglar had gotten into the house, but make a long story short, I investigated and I opened the door of my record room and I suddenly realized I was walking downhill. Yes, the floor had caved in. Fortunately, this is Southern California, so instead of a basement below, there was a crawl space, so it didn't fall very far. But yes, the floor had caved in, the center of it had fallen a couple of feet or so, and the record cabinets were teetering all over the place. And that's what happened, and we had to move out of that house.
When it comes to your record collection, is there a record that sticks out in your mind as a favorite or one of the favorites?
Well, in terms of what's, I kind of equate that with what has made the show popular, and the all-time most popular record on my show is Fish Heads by Barnes & Barnes. And number two would be Dead Puppies Aren't Much Fun by Ogden Edsel, and then comes the aforementioned They're Coming to Take Me Away, ha-ha, Napoleon the 14th, who is still alive and well and living in Philadelphia. Talked to him just yesterday.
Now, what do you think made those the popular records, albums, of the last more than 40 years, nearly 50 years now? What was it about those three?
They were good, catchy songs. You could remember them. And the lyrics were funny. In the case of Fish Heads and Dead Puppies, things that were both made in the late 1970s, and they had kind of a lyric sensibility that appealed to the younger people of that time and still have some appeal today, especially when you hear them for the first time.
We're talking about novelty music here. Why novelty music? Why did that appeal to you?
From the start, just because it was lively and funny, and the Spike Jones, they would have sound effects in it, like guns going off and cowbells, stuff like that. But different novelty records appeal for different reasons. With Fish Heads, you had something, the Fish Heads, the chorus of the song, they sing it like the Chipmunks with sped up voices, sped up electronically. And that was a sound that the kids in 1978 could still associate with the Chipmunks, who were popular in 1958. and the Chipmunk song and those things. Christmas, Christmas time is near. I'll be that time before long, kids. So anyway, that was something that was immediately appealing with the Chipmunk sound. People thought, oh, that's just like my kids, what I heard when I was a kid. But the lyrics were something that the actual Chipmunks would have never sung about fish heads. They would have sung about somewhat nicer things. And dead puppies aren't much fun. That was something that was startling. And at first I got complaining calls about it. They said, you dead puppies, you can't sing about that. And the chorus of that goes, dead puppies aren't much fun. And so when people would complain about it, I say, would you rather hear a song that says dead puppies are lots of fun? And, of course, people made up songs with that exact phrase and sent them to me. And I didn't play those. Even Dr. Demento has a little bit of taste.
Well, that brings up an interesting question, because a lot of novelty songs certainly have colorful language that on terrestrial radio you cannot play, and some subject matters that you cannot play. Were there big fights when you were on terrestrial radio with censorship?
Yes, I was very much aware of it, and we had specific fights over a few songs. I knew going in that I was on terrestrial radio, and I could not play the seven dirty words and various other words too, and had to steer clear of things. Not that I would ever play them anyway, but I had to steer clear of things that used racist language and that kind of thing. So I knew that going in, but there were lots of borderline things. Several Frank Zappa songs. There was one that was very popular with my audience, which was called, and I hope WWGH will forgive me for saying, titties and beer. That was extremely popular with my audience, but the station decided after a little bit of hand-wringing that, at first they decided that titties were okay. There were other similar words that were not okay, but titties was okay, and then they decided, no, that's not okay. So I had to make this cuckoo noise that came up every time Frank Zappa said titties. And so I played it that way. It was babies and beer. So,
well,
so that was one specific case about that. There were some others. Monty Python has a famous song called Sit on My Face. That was another one that they allowed, and then they didn't allow. And eventually the FCC fined a couple of stations for that one, and that has none of the famous seven dirty words in it. Sit on my face. You know, no dirty words there. It's the context, of course.
Is there, because it's kind of, for people who don't work in terrestrial radio, it's an interesting conversation to have, because a lot of things with the FCC are not exactly spelled out what you can and cannot do.
Exactly.
It's all, if nobody ever reports you, a lot of times nothing ever happens. But yeah. If somebody does, then they come down and they make a judgment on it and so on and so forth. So it's a hard line to travel outside of those seven words you can't say.
It certainly is. You have to kind of guess and hope somebody doesn't report you. I mean, there's a couple of times that on terrestrial radio I let bad words sneak through on a record. I'd forgotten they were there or was distracted when it came up, things like that. And I never got hauled on the carpet for it, at least not by the FCC. So yeah, I was in some ways lucky, but in other ways I always kept pretty careful watch. And, you know, now that I'm online, not on terrestrial radio anymore, an interesting thing happened. When that first happened, when we finally signed off FM radio and it was online only, for a few weeks, I was just, the sky was the limit. I played some pretty nasty things on my show, and then I realized, well, there's still people who listen with their kids, and maybe they don't want to hear something quite that blatant. So I became aware of that, and now when I play something that is a little blatant, I usually save it for the last few minutes of the show.
Wanted to remind people again, Dr. Demento still does a brand new two-hour show every week, and you can get that at drdemento.com. Doctor, were there any other changes besides censorship and language as you went from terrestrial to internet only?
At that moment, well, a gradual change. Now I get into what in music radio you'd call deeper cuts, things that perhaps would not have been the most recognized song on an album. I'll get into things, especially from the past, from earlier in the 20th century, that I wouldn't have thought to play on radio before. I'd play some comedy from 1915 or something like that, and the program directors of FM rock radio stations weren't necessarily delighted to hear something like that on their snazzy modern rock station. But now I have the freedom to do that. So that's a change. And I can also, I've gotten into, people seem to appreciate when I talk a little more about the history of some of the songs that I'm playing in the context that they were in and why they were considered very funny at the time or otherwise significant. I can get into more of that than I could when I was on stations that bragged about how much music and how little talk they had.
When you were syndicated on so many stations across the country, and now versus now being on the internet but available all over the world, how do you think the listenership changed or evolved?
Well, of course, now people don't have to kind of hope and pray that there's a station with a demento-friendly program director in their vicinity. They can anywhere you can get internet radio. I guess might be hard to find in China, but we do have listeners from all around the world. So, yeah, that's changed, and I really miss having a live audience. I'll tell you that. I'll own up to that right away. But there are advantages to internet radio as well, especially in this day and age when you can even rig up your car to hear it.
It has changed the world and keeps changing as time goes on.
Oh, yes. The music has changed, too. When I started the show, there was no such thing as rap or hip-hop. Some would say that's a good thing, but it's been certainly a major development that has changed the history of music. And I do play a funny rap song now and then.
Is there... Well, I want to talk about this idea of novelty music, because there are songs that are funny, but I would not necessarily call them novelty music. How do you draw that line?
Novelty music was a term made up by the music industry and the radio industry for... It actually applies to anything with an unusual sound of some kind that perks people up, and the sound of the record by itself will be something they're not used to. But more commonly, it's something that is funny for one reason or another. Either the topic is funny, or it's a parody of some current song that changes the words around in an amusing way. So there are all different ways that something can be funny or be a novelty record. I tend to associate it now, and I think a lot of people do, we tend to associate it with the funny 45 RPM hits of the late 50s and up into the mid 60s, with that particular era when the so-called novelty songs were frequently part of a top 40 radio station's playlist. So you'd be listening to a top 40 station in 1959, and you'd hear Elvis, and you'd hear Chubby Checker, and whoever was popular at that time, and then maybe every couple of hours you would hear a funny song, like the Purple People Eater. A lot of us tend to associate the phrase novelty record with that era and with songs of that type. So I would rather just refer to what I play as being funny music, just demented music.
Well, one of the things that fascinates me most about you, Dr. Demento, is at what most people might consider the height of your career, when you were syndicated all over the country and had huge audiences, how you got music, how somebody in Marion, Indiana, would be able to get a song on the Dr. Demento show. Tell how this went on, even when you were at the top.
Well, by the time I was at the top, people who made this kind of music would realize, hey, there's somebody who might play my song. So they would send them to me. So I started getting records and cassette tapes and reel-to-reel tapes and every other imaginable format. And I'd get dozens of these in the mail every week. And that was the main way a lot of things came to me. That's the way Fish Heads and Dead Puppies came to me, along with lots that I did not play or just played once or twice. But at the same time, I'm always drawing on the collection that I've been building up since I was a kid in school. I'd go to school, and after school, I'd hit a thrift store on the way home. And I have a large collection that I started back then in the 1950s and still add to now and then. So, of course, nowadays, a lot of the music comes in online on MP3s, which is fine, too.
What is Dr. Demento's taste? What is going to make sure a song gets on the air if it's sent in from another part of the country at this point in your career?
It's amusing. The lyrics are funny. The music is at least listenable. And a lot of it's just kind of something that's hard to put into words, like the music director of any radio station. They have certain subjective ways that they react to songs, and they could tell you, hey, I like this. I think this will be good for our station. So I'm kind of the same way. I like it, and I think my listeners will enjoy it.
42 minutes past the hour, chatting with the legendary Dr. Demento. Don't forget, Dr. Demento offers a brand new 2-hour episode of his show every week via drdemento.com. Monthly subscribers have access to a vast streaming archive of episodes of the Dr. Demento shows aired from the 1970s to present, nearly 50 years on the air. The all-new and number one Billboard charting comedy album, Dr. Demento, Covered in Punk, is out now. Visit coveredinpunk.com or dementedpunk.com for more information. And I had a chance to listen to this just last night. It is great. William Shatner is there. Weird Al Yankovic is there. It is a great, great album, to be sure. Dr. Demento, I want to talk a minute about some things that are calling cards of Dr. Demento. The top hat and the tails and the coat, where did that all come from?
Well, one time I went to the Grammys. I bought a ticket and went to the ceremony. It was a year that Weird Al was nominated for the first time. And I rented a tux, because that's what people do if they don't own one. And so so my manager at the time saw that and said, "You look great. You ought to wear that every time you do a public appearance." And pretty quickly I realized that I should top it off by adding a top hat to it, as is traditional for fancy occasions. And instead of just a regular tux jacket, I got one of the ones with the longer tails, and there I was.
And do you ever get tired of wearing them? Every time I see you, every time a picture comes up, there you are. A top hat's not easy to wear.
No, it's not too bad. I mean, I've owned 6 or 7 top hats in my time, and they're the good ones, the ones that collapse, the ones that are made of real silk. Those are kind of costly, but to me, they're comfortable to wear. With them being collapsible, it's easy to pack in a suitcase, and the tux. You know, I quickly learned that you can get tuxes made of what they call tropical wool, that are more comfortable, especially in warm weather.
Dr. Demento, you were on terrestrial radio for nearly 40 years, up through 2010. Yeah. What happened? Mm-hmm. What happened in 2010?
Well, it was a long, slow thing. Been a lot of changes in the radio industry, as you know. More and more stations, in fact, nearly all of the stations in the major markets, the big cities, nearly all of them are owned by large corporations, which tend to do things in a corporate way. And rather than having individual program directors put a station together the way that they think is best, the way that they think is fun, they follow rules. And some of those corporate owners made a rule against people from outside the station or the corporate hierarchy coming in and just playing whatever music they think works without thoroughly vetting it and without thorough proof that it is something that the audience will like, because audiences everywhere else like it and that sort of thing. So there was some resistance to that as some of the great stations around the country became bought up by faceless conglomerates. So that was one reason. And the changing tastes of music. I mean, my audience was certainly getting older, and a younger generation was coming up for whom their music was hip-hop and rap. Nothing wrong with that, but it was not necessarily the kind of music that my existing audience would like very much. In fact, a lot of my veteran listeners hate hip-hop with a passion, as do many people of those generations. I'm sure you've heard about that, how the boomers, you know, my original audience was boomers when they were kids. So,
well, this is interesting, Dr. DeMeno. We have a host here on the station named Mike Wilson, and we just got a message from him via Facebook when he heard you were on this morning. I played the Dr. DeMeno show on WQEL in 1989 and 1990.
Okay.
I still have the liners that he made using my name. The shows came to us on 33 and a third records. Boy, Dr. DeMeno, that takes you back.
Yes. Yeah, we used those records from the 70s up to 1992, when we finally switched to CDs.
Well, do you still do liners for stations, Doctor?
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. But it's fun to do those sort of things.
Hi, this is Dr. Demento, and you're listening to Scott on WWGH, of course, Marion, Ohio's radio station.
And one of his favorite songs was We Love Barney Fife, so there we go.
Oh, yeah, a parody of... Oh, you know, I've got a senior moment. What song was that? Oh, it was Billy Joel. Yeah. We Didn't Start the Fire. That's what it was a parody of. So, which was a hit at that time. So a song that sounded like a current hit, but referenced a TV show that so many people had grown up with. So that was a good click to hit.
Everybody, I think, listening to this show will know the name Weird Al Yankovic. Tell the story.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, tell us
never
the story.
Never heard of him.
I never heard of him. How did that all come to be?
Well, I started getting lots of tapes and cassettes in the mail, as I was saying earlier, and one day a cassette came in the mail from Alfred Yankovic of Linwood, California, and I put it on, and it was darn good. It was very crudely recorded, probably with a little portable cassette machine in his bedroom. But it was very well done. The song was funny, and the accordion accompaniment was just right and very unusual at that time to have an accordion on a song kind of oriented to young people. But it worked. The lyrics were funny, and you could hear them. A lot of people would send me tapes that were nice, except that the vocal got drowned out by the guitar or something, or the diction wasn't very good, or the lyrics were just didn't fit the music very well. But with that very first tape, everything clicked, so I played it on the show. And then he sent another one that was even better. So and he kept growing gradually, expanding his audience with lots of both inspiration and perspiration, as he still does today. He kept his audience loyal and keep expanding his audience constantly. So, what can I say? He's certainly the biggest thing that's come to my show in my nearly 50-year history. So, more power to Al.
Doctor, do you want to talk about your album here, the all-new and number one Billboard charting comedy album, Dr. DeMeno, Covered in Punk, which, again,
yeah,
you can get coveredinpunk.com and dementedpunk.com. for more information and to get that album. What is this about? What do people get if they get this album?
Well, for one thing, it's kind of like listening to my show because I introduce the songs, my own voice, though with the CD version you can still cue up the songs on their own. It is, excuse me, all songs that have become familiar through being played on the Dr. Demento show, but covered by contemporary artists, not the people who did them in the first place. It started with all punk bands, and the concept gradually expanded to include artists such as William Shatner and Weird Al. But it all started out with, well, for instance, The Cockroach That Ate Cincinnati, a song I've been playing for many, many years, as redone by The Misfits, the great punk band. And they took it to heart and did a splendid version of it, really got into it. And they brought in other punk acts like the Dead Milkmen and the Meat Men and, let's see, Low Straight Jackets, Shonen Knife from Japan. I mean, there's all kinds of people. Uncle Floyd and Ookie, who used to run a great TV show in New Jersey that was kind of meant for kids, but meant for big kids, too. So he's a legend there. And Osaka Pop Star, which is my manager's band, and they have quite a reputation in the punk world as well. So the Tipper Kids, if you remember them. And so many great artists that we were able to bring in once this thing got rolling. You know, it started out as a single CD, wound up being two. So, and there you go. And vinyl, of course, a three-disc vinyl set with... my manager is just a great connoisseur of art as well, so covers by Dean Friedman, certainly a name to be reckoned with, and about a half a dozen other great artists can be found in the booklet with illustrations for each one of the songs in the album. So it's really quite an entertainment for the eye as well as the ear.
Mm. Doctor, when you look back at your career, is there a high moment in your career?
Well, yeah, okay. If I was to pick one, it would probably be in 1980 when Weird Al Yankovic, who was still in college, but had become quite familiar to the listeners of my show, if not the world at large, he told me he was all set to be a guest on the show, a live guest in studio. And he told me he had a new song, and could he sing his new song? And he described it briefly, and I trusted him by that time. I knew he wasn't going to say something really nasty. So he came in and did his new song, which was called Another One Rides the Bus, a parody of Queen's Another One Bites the Dust, which was very big at that time. And it was just something we knew. I fortunately had a tape recorder running, and we knew as soon as it was finished that it was Al's best song yet and that the listeners were going to love it, and indeed they did. Over the next couple of months, we just were besieged with calls not only from listeners but from radio stations, too. How can I get that? I need a copy of that to play on my station. And we signed up quite a few new stations just because of that song. So if I had to nail it down to three minutes that was a great moment, it would be that one. But there were some wonderful interviews too. Of the one I did with John Cleese is very close to the top of the list. I had Frank Zappa on four times and George Carlin, always very, very interesting. What a great student of comedy and what makes comedy work he was. So we wound up, rather than just cracking jokes, we wound up talking about that. So that was another wonderful moment.
Being Dr. Demento, being this person for so many years, and everybody knows who you are in the broadcast industry, do you think is the biggest misconception people have about your show, that from maybe people who haven't heard it, or maybe people who have heard it, or maybe the biggest misconception about you, Dr. Demento?
Oh, I don't know what they think of me particularly. I guess they expect me to be zany and jumping up and down all the time, which I'm not. Off the air, I'm relatively quiet, and I'm a pretty serious student of comedy music and music in general. Off the air, I listen to lots of other kinds of music. So that would be one thing. And probably a lot of people think that some people used to think that I play fish heads every week simply because it stands out so much. But no, I play it maybe three times a year now. And people used to think that I would just bring in a stack of records and talk casually about them, which is, to be honest, what I used to do when I started. But now I plan things fairly carefully to make sure I'm making the most of my 2 hours of time.
Will there be a time when Dr. Demento does not want to do radio anymore?
Well, I guess if I'm physically unable to do it, or if funny music is officially banned by the government or something, or you know, if I don't know how well I'd adapt to working under the thumb of some persnickety program director again. I'm so used to just doing it on my own with pretty much free rein, but I still really enjoy doing it every week.
Is there any
a little bit of drudgery now that I'm also pretty much the engineer of the recording stage? I have to make sure that a lot of things are right and make sure I have the best copy of everything and all that, and put everything in order in the computer and all that stuff. That can be, there's a little bit of drudgery associated with that, but basically I really enjoy it. Look forward to it every week.
Is there anything in this nearly half century of a career that you regret?
I've been, you know, fired a couple of times, and stations have dropped the show. There a few times, not too many, but a few that I've put my foot in my mouth, and so you know that happens with anybody over a long period of time. But no, not a lot of regrets. I mean, maybe a business decision or two, but really not very darn much.
Got a few more moments here with the legendary Dr. Demento, but want to get this in one more time, that Dr. Demento is still on the air and offering a brand new two-hour episode of his show every week via drdemento.com. Monthly subscribers have access to a vast streaming archive of episodes of the Dr. Demento shows aired from the 1970s to present, and also the all-new and number one Billboard charting comedy album Dr. Demento Covered in Punk is out now. Visit coveredinpunk.com or dementedpunk.com for more information. Doctor, what's the future hold?
Another show. I still got to nail down the next show, which will go online midnight Friday into Saturday. So that's how I'm going to be spending my day. But Scott, I want to thank you for reading all those announcements. You've done that much more carefully and more promptly than anybody else who's ever interviewed me.
Well, I'm glad to hear
that. I usually have to interrupt at the end and say, hey, I got a new album.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Compliments from Dr. Demento, that'll keep me in good stead for quite a while. About a minute and a half here, Dr. Demento. Tell me how you'd like people to remember you, because they're going to remember you. You cut a path. You're very unique. You did something nobody else did, and I don't know if anybody else is doing it today in the same way. How do you hope they remember you?
Well, what I get thanked the most for is introducing people to Weird Al, introducing people to Frank Zappa. He would be the number one artist that people say that about, he and Al. So, and that's what I hope they remember me for, but maybe even beyond that is just somebody who helped them get through tough times, helped them get through school, or just brighten their day or their evening for a couple of hours. Yeah, so many people have said, you got me through school, or sometimes, my parents got divorced and you got me through all that, things like that. So, I already know that people remember me for that, and I just hope that continues.
It's a nice way to be remembered, and keep on keeping on. It's been a pleasure to have the legendary Dr. Demento on the program this morning. For the first time, I hope this is not the last time, Doctor. And before we wrap it up today, I stepped on it earlier on, I'm being told, so I'm going to step out if you want to give us that liner one more time, and then you can sign off the program today.
Woo-woo! Hi, this is Dr. Demento, and you're listening to Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio's LP radio station, 107.1.
And say goodbye to him, Doctor.
Goodbye. Don't forget to stay demented.
Doctor, you have a wonderful day, and I'll talk with you soon.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you. Dr. Demento, how about that? Would you expect that on this station? We get all kinds. And by the way, for the record, he said kitties earlier on. Kitties. Little kitties. Charlie Evers coming up next. Oh, Charlie, follow this. And Swap Shop with Glenn Coble at 12:10 today. Oh, man. One more day this week. I'm out of here.
You have it exactly right.
What did I have incorrect? I want to be correct with this.
Oh, that's for you to try to figure out and